was one of those moments where we were working hard every single day. That is part of the equation. Hard work and curiosity are like the two ingredients to create luck if you want to manufacture it. So it was a really cool situation where it just feels like it materialized out of nowhere and gave us exactly what we needed to move on into the future.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. Today, you're going to listen from somebody that truthfully has never worked a W-2 job. And what's interesting is with the different speakers we brought onto the show, there's a lot of business owners that started in a W-2 job in a corporate world and transitioned out of it. And I'm not saying that one way is better than the other. So today you're going to listen from our guest that started as an entrepreneur and how he just really got after what he wanted to get after and what he was inspired to do. And so you're going to learn from him, from his story. And on top of that, how he's really been able to integrate systems and processes and automation to help him elevate himself and his companies to where they are today. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Justin Benson. Justin, thanks for joining us today, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. What inspires us to get out of bed in the morning? Currently, it's just two small children yelling because they woke up. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's inspiration or being forced to get out of bed.
Dude, I am not a morning person by nature. I get the most creative work done like between 9 and 1 o'clock in the morning, but I had to become a morning person because there's no other option now. So,
isn't that the great thing about entrepreneurship, though, is like you design your business and job around what works for you.
So, oh, definitely. Yeah, that kind of freedom I wouldn't trade for the world.
So, Justin, share with our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do today.
Yeah, today I am CEO of Barra Agency. We are the technical way of saying that is we're a fractional CTO agency, meaning chief technology officer. The simple way of stating that is that we are the fastest way for businesses to streamline their technology and their processes and eliminate all the mundane stuff from their workflows and get back a bunch of time into their team, their workforce, themselves personally, whatever that looks like. So
this is going to be a fun conversation. I already know because this is something you and I are both passionate about. And before we started recording, we were talking about some of the things that we put together for ourselves. And now we're in a position to offer it to others to really save on time. And I like to think that most of us got into business for whatever reason it was to get our time back. And so the challenge and the trap I think a lot of business owners fall into, though, is that they end up finding themselves working more than if they were to just work a W-2 job and actually have weekends off. So what you and your company does, especially in today's world, being able to integrate all the incredible technologies, and I know you're working on some pretty incredible AI stuff, what a great way to truly get back more of your time and just as a business owner to work more effectively and efficiently. That's really what it comes down to. So being able to get more done in a shorter period.
Yeah. And being able to like just bring back humans to the human side of it, right? Like depending on what industry you're in. In real estate, for example, you're in front of somebody that's transacting on the most expensive thing that they will probably ever buy or sell in their entire lives. So you should be able to be present and there with them, not thinking about the 7 million things that you have to do afterwards and be able to serve them in that way, right? And that translates into product-based industries. It translates into any service-based industries. But if our people are free to connect with other humans, businesses tend to flourish.
100%. And that reminds me of a quote, Stephen R. Covey. He says, be efficient with things, effective with people. I think one of the challenges some organizations are running into is that they're trying to over automate that relationship with people. Yeah. There's etiquette to this. There's a time and a place and things that are more appropriate. So awesome. Well, Justin, let's take it back now. When did this entrepreneur journey really begin for you?
Well, I was raised by two parents that are like serial entrepreneurs separately of each other. They didn't really work together. They always did their own thing. So I don't know. My first introduction into this probably at 12 years old when I wanted a dirt bike. I told my dad I wanted a dirt bike because I want to start racing motocross. And he said, great, you can start mowing the lawn and you can save up and buy one. So I was really pumped about it. It was like $20 every time I mowed the lawn, really pumped. And I mowed the lawn a few times, did the math and realized I'm going to be like 80 years old by the time I can afford this dirt bike. So I went back to my dad with that problem. I was like, hey, I need you to pay me more to mow this lawn. He said, well, I'm not going to do that because this is the going rate for you mowing this lawn. But you can go mow your grandparents' lawn right behind us as well. But that is not my lawn. So you're going to pay for your own gas and you're going to pay me rent for this lawnmower, actually, to help me cover my costs of like all the wear and tear that's going to happen to it. So I was like, okay, great.
12 years old,
man.
This is the conversation you're having. Incredible.
Yeah, with my dad. So started doing that, still not making enough money. So he helps me flyer the neighborhood, get more clients. And then I get to a point where I'm maxed out on time. And I go back to him like, I'm still not making enough money. And like, you guys won't let me like skip school for this. And like, I still got to go to church with you guys on Sunday. So like half my day's gone on Sunday. So all I really have is all day Saturday and in the afternoons on Sundays. And it's in the summertime. It's super hot outside right now here in Arizona. So what am I going to do? So he would take me down and he helped me like hire some help essentially. And then I started renting my grandparents' lawnmower, my uncle's lawnmower, a bunch of different people's stuff. And I was running this little lawn care empire at 12 years old with my dad. And my birthday is Christmas Eve. So he had a dirt bike sitting by the Christmas tree on my birthday on Christmas Eve. And I got half of the way there, essentially. But there was a note on it that said, hey, bud, super proud of you. I took the money out of your bank account and paid for the rest of it. So like, still didn't even give it to me for free. Yeah, after all the hard work, right? He took that money.
What were some of your thoughts going through your mind just throughout this whole process, right? Starting this business, seeing that dirt bike for your birthday, like what were some of those thoughts, feelings, lessons that you were learning at that age that you can recall?
I mean, I think it taught me some of the hard ones to learn, which is grit, the ability to keep going when it sucks and it's hard. It's hot outside, but I have obligations to my clients and I can't just not mow their lawn today, right? Like I really have to follow through on my obligations. And that's like the other thing is do what you say you're going to do. I mean, that was a huge thing and a quote that I live by that my dad gave me is do what you say you're going to do. So it taught me that grit to be able to follow through. And it gave me the inspiration to know that, hey, if I actually lock eyes with something and figure out how to become resourceful, I can really accomplish the goals that I have in my brain. So it gave me a lot of confidence as a younger person that followed me well into the rest of my life.
If you're listening to this and you're wondering how to get started with anything, like Justin was 12 years old when he started his first business. If he can do it at 12 years old, you can do it now. Wherever you're at in your journey, there are opportunities all around us.
You just start. Yep.
Just start. Just get moving. So awesome. What an incredible experience. Thanks for sharing that story. So that was your first introduction to your first business, if you will.
Yeah.
Let's fast forward a little bit. What did post high school look like? Because you said you never worked a W-2. Was there college? Did you start a job or a business right out of high school? Like share with us a little bit about that part of your journey.
Well, I was decently good at school and my parents being entrepreneurs were like, well, our life is pretty stressful. You know what? You should be. You're real smart. You like sports. So I don't know, go become like a sports medicine doctor, like orthopedic surgeon, something like that. So I went and got a biochemistry degree in college is what I did. And instead of going to med school, like I was supposed to, took my MCATs, did all that stuff. I bailed 3 months before and started a tech company with my good friend, Aaron, basically an IT company where we were building essentially before Dropbox existed and back when email servers were inside of our offices running on like a Windows 98 server, we were building a little software that allowed people to access their files remotely without having to pay for the expensive enterprise grade products that Microsoft and people like that had. So we would implement that into these small and medium sized businesses and it was awesome. And he got a job opportunity to go become a like database engineer for Disney Studios and ended up becoming like the senior guy over there, like literally keeping hackers out of Disney's movie studio. And I couldn't run it without him. So we sold it to a local company. And it was the biggest mistake I made early in my life. I had no vision for what that company was. And we were literally building Dropbox and we didn't know it. So yes, the ability for the everyday man to access their files remotely hosted in a cloud. Correct. That is exactly what we were building in the software that we had. And we stopped short of the finish line there. So we were just young, like 19, yeah. Well, 20 year old. I'd skipped a grade way back in the day. So I graduated early. And so just young 20 year old mistakes of just not being able to see further down the road of what that thing could be because of my limited knowledge and experience in the world. So that was entrepreneur journey number one.
So two questions following up on this. One, do you feel like if you had some sort of mentor or somebody in that space, do you think things would have turned out differently? And two, how do you go from a biochemistry degree to a tech startup? Because those at all are at all related.
Yeah, I really do think having mentors is like a very large part of my life right now. I have like a group of older dudes that are like my personal board of advisors, essentially. So yeah, I really do think that if I had that back then, they might have been the people that went, hey, here's some larger ideas and applications for what this could look like, right? And then how did I go from biochem to... I've always been a nerd on the inside. Like I was the sports guy all through high school and a bit of college. And on my summers, I would go get my A+ like certification, my Cisco certification from DeVry, went back when that was still a thing, like when I was in high school. I was always building computers and playing with code and just anything I could do and tinker with. It was what I'd love to explore, right? So when I had that friend, Aaron, that said he kind of understood how to build the nuts and bolts of this thing, I had enough technical knowledge to be dangerous, but I could probably get out there and sell it. So that was where the divide happened when he got his job offer. I didn't know enough to, I don't know, buy him out and try to find another technical person. We just said, okay, well, we can't run it without both of us. And we just sold it.
Talk to us a little bit about making that transition from going down that medical route to jumping ship and jumping into, to some would probably consider a risky tech startup. Like what were some of the internal conversations, struggles, maybe some external influence from parents, family? Like what was that transition like for you making that jump?
Yeah, well, obviously parents not thrilled about the idea for sure, because I'm deviating from the safe path. But I blame them. They raised me the way that they raised me, for them to expect me. Honestly, it was refreshing when I made that jump, because the thought of going to med school for 4 years, 6 years, then doing my residency, then doing a fellowship after that, and now I'm 12 years down the road only to work on left knees for the rest of my life, sounded like a miserable existence to me, actually. So it was refreshing to part from that. Now I just have enough anatomical information to not need WebMD to misdiagnose myself.
So I went through a similar situation. I got my bachelor's degree in nursing, worked in an emergency room and in a cardiac hospital, but a few months into that, and the whole intention was to go specialized and make a few a few hundred thousand a year and then get into real estate investing. And once I started that career, after I got my bachelor's degree, started working, my mind fast forwarded years to like, okay, well, one, you need 2 to 3 years of experience in an ICU to specialize in the field you want to get into. Then you got to go back to school for a few more years. By then, you already have one kid. By then, you're probably going to have 2 or 3 more kids. Then you're going to have all the debt on top of it just to do the same thing day after day. Like I literally felt like the walls closing in on me. I felt claustrophobic, and maybe you can relate in that sense. And that's when I realized like, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. This is not what I want to be doing. And I'm grateful for that experience. I'm grateful for the ability to learn how to learn and the people I met along the way. But that was my realization and wake up call, is like, okay, there's something different out there for me. And to our listeners, dear, you might be in that situation right now. So you just heard from myself and Justin, like pay attention to that internal dialogue, if you will. Like, I think we know when we're in flow, when we're aligned with what we feel like we should be doing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, statement? Totally. I don't think that it's beneficial to, I don't know, let's do the nursing career for a long enough time so that way I can have enough savings to then like be able to jump ship and do the thing, right? Like already it takes so much time to become an expert at something, right? Starting later just delays it further. So yes. I'm a bigger fan of start now in whatever small capacity you can. If you got a nursing job and you're working 4 10-hour shifts, what are you doing with those other 3 days? Working at a real estate investment company, learning the ropes, like what can you do so that way you can expedite the gap? Because yeah, like becoming an expert at becoming an expert is really the whole crux of entrepreneurship at the end of the day. Like you don't know everything, but you have to learn how to know things very quickly.
100%. And just to be clear, like Justin and I, and I'm speaking for Justin, we're not poo-pooing on college. Like if that's your path, if you found something that you need it and want a college degree, go for it, right? Like what we're sharing is just that wasn't the path for, and we did go through it, right? We did go through school. And I think, at least for me, I needed to realize that that wasn't my path.
Yeah.
I had to start going down that direction to realize it wasn't my path. So us sharing our experience, if you're listening to this, we're not poo-pooing on college. If that's the path you want to go on, it's more so just like, do what you feel inspired to do is really what it comes down to. And pay attention to that internal dialogue. Because if you're uneasy, if you're stressed, like there's something internally that's conflicting.
Yeah.
And that it's up to you to discover and figure out what that is and then get on that path as soon as you can. And to Justin's point, don't delay it. Like if there's something you envision yourself doing 20, 30 years from now and it feels right, don't delay it. Figure out what you got to do today to start making it happen. And it's incredible how the world, universe, God just makes it work when you get clear on that vision and you start taking action.
Yeah, man.
Awesome.
Yeah. I really think the following that passion, Paul Graham talks about, he's like the founder of Y Combinator, kind of the godfather of venture capital. I live in the tech world, so inspired by a bunch of those people. Essentially, he's like a really, really big advocate of making sure that when you find your zone of genius, it feels like play to you, but feels like work to everybody else, right? I'm working on an AI project right now, and I just lose myself locked to the screen, refining models, training with new data, screwing around with it, toying with outputs, running tests over and over and over again. So much to the degree that, like, I don't know, I had this fancy dinner to go to 2 weeks ago and I showed up in a hat because I couldn't pull myself away from my computer to go shower before it, right? Like, and if I asked my wife if she'd love doing that, she's like, no, like, put me in front of a bus right now, please. Like, don't make me do that. So that's my little zone. I'm very good at locking in with something like that. So when you find that thing that is feels like play, but looks like work to everybody else, if you can stay there, you'll figure out how to make money down the road.
I think one thing people need to do more frequently and realize sooner than later is I gain clarity and identify what energizes you and what drains you. Because when you find that zone of genius, to your point, and you're energized, your day flies. Like 12 hours is gone before you realize it. Not once. Like there's times I've forgotten to eat lunch. Who forgets to eat lunch? But like you're so zoned in, you're energized by the conversations, the work, whatever it is that you're doing. The challenge is that a lot of us are grown up not being taught how to gain that clarity. And there's probably a lot of things that we grow up doing that we don't want to do. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think in business, there's always going to be things you don't want to do. So I think just having that discipline and just putting your head down and doing it is an important skill set. But understanding and gaining clarity on what energizes you and what drains you sooner than later is going to be critical, because that's going to help you to effectively delegate those things that do drain you to other people.
Right.
So that as an organization, as a business owner, you're firing on all cylinders. If you had everyone in your company doing things that drain them and you're wondering why you can't grow your revenue, like take a step back, take a look at it. Like people are energized by different things.
Right.
So gain clarity on that and then delegate effectively. So
yeah, I agree.
Well, let's jump forward. So actually, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, let's talk about where your life took you after you sold that first tech startup.
Right? Sounds good, man.
We'll be back in a few short moments. Hey, Dallin Schultz here with Rev Equity Group. We just launched an exciting new investment opportunity for those looking to diversify their investments across 1,000+ apartment units in some of the hottest markets in the country. If you are fed up with banks and the stock market and want to invest in hard assets to more effectively grow and preserve your wealth, then click on the link in the show notes for more info. Or go to investwithrev.com and schedule a short 15-minute intro call so we can determine if our investment strategy is aligned with your goals. It's time to take your financial future into your own hands. Take action, schedule a call, and find out how my team can serve you. At Rev, we make apartment investing easy. All right, welcome back to The Millionaire Mind. So, Justin, share with us a little bit about what that next chapter in your life looked like after you exited that tech startup.
Welcome to the eclectic past of me. Started building a fundraising company for elementary schools after that with like a tech product at its base, essentially. So we, this thing called Apex Fun Run, it's incredible, made Forbes magazine's top franchises. It was amazing. And at the time of franchising, I decided it was time for me to step away. I was getting married in a month from then. So I exited the company, sold my equity back. And I was literally just supposed to take the month off, get married, come back from a honeymoon, and then just sort out what I was going to be when I grew up again, all over again, essentially. And instead of that happening, I was on my way to Four Peaks, this brewery here in Arizona, to like celebrate the exit with some friends. And I got a call on my way there from an old friend, John Gletch, and he said, "Hey, I know you're building that like software elementary school fundraising thing, but ever think about starting a real estate company?" Obviously, no, never. In my wildest dreams, biochem tech fundraising school, Justin. Never, 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 never. So I did not know what I was going to do next. And his daughter is my goddaughter, and we're really good friends. And I thought that it would be a lot of fun to build it together. So I said, sure. So instead of taking the month off, I went and got my real estate license. We came back, and him and I started building what is now the Gletch Group, and built it from him and I in our hoodies and board shorts, high-fiving every time the phone rang, to making up excuses to meet clients at Starbucks because our office wasn't nice enough, all the way to operating in three states and being the number one reviewed team on all of Yelp and one of the biggest teams in the entire nation. So operating out of Arizona and San Diego and Las Vegas. So that was a really fun journey. I personally sold like 500 some odd houses, me, Justin, executing purchase contracts on behalf of clients. So I cut my teeth on learning real estate. And what was interesting is I got to take a lot of my tech skills with me, right? I'm new to the real estate industry, so I don't know any better. I just operated the way I did in tech. So as far as our systems and automations were concerned, if the stuff didn't exist, well, we just built it. And if integrations didn't exist, we built those too. And we shaped the technology to our business practices. And it allowed us to expedite growth very quickly, which was a lot of fun. So that was kind of the next two-step journey there. The only reason I ever stepped away from that, we are still dear friends. I'm literally going to drink some wine and smoke some cigars with them later tonight. The only reason I stepped away from that is because me and two friends, my best friends, got signed by a record label. I told you this is eclectic. So got signed by a record label to write three records. And we got all kinds of cool opportunities with that. We were on the cover of Spotify playlists and millions and millions of streams, a sold out concert at the Red Rocks Amphitheater with some other friends, like bands in the industry. And it was a ton of fun. And I realized, again, that was one of those moments where I thought that maybe I wanted to do that as a full-time career. And then I got face to face with it and said, no, definitely not. I had a young family. I don't love performing enough to travel and be away from them. I kind of went back to my little nerd self. The only part that I loved about it was sitting in the studio and like tinkering with sounds and songs and building the music side, right? Like that's the thing that I love to do. And it wasn't exactly the music. It was just the process of creating something from scratch, right? And also music is a hard way to make a living as well. I kind of looked at it and went, well, if I don't love it that much on the performance side, and that's like literally 90% of this job, and I don't want to be away from my family, and there's probably better ways to make money with my time, given my skill set, then I should probably go ahead and call it quits. So we got through three records and we stepped away from it.
What a cool opportunity. And it sounds like the successes you were able to experience early on opened up the doors for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the contract law that went in, talk about becoming an expert at becoming an expert. We had a music attorney, of course, but I don't trust the attorney to translate everything for me. I became a student of music law for 6 months straight. and learned exactly how royalty mechanics and streaming rights and licensing and masters and all of the mechanics of how those situations work in publishing, I became an expert knowing all of that. So that actually translates to a lot of different things, podcasts, books, a lot of the different conjoining industries operate mechanically the same.
So if our listener or myself want to go listen to these records, where can we find them?
Yeah, it's RNW Music. So depending on where you're spiritual journey or whatever is at, it's me and two friends from church that kind of grew up writing music, and we got this awesome opportunity to write like Christian contemporary worship music, essentially. So worship music that like churches around the world sing.
That's super cool, man. You've had quite the journey so far, huh?
Yeah, and there's still one more real estate company before Barra Agency. So
tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was doing some consulting, helping people fix their systems and automations. Like I was helping a lender build out her Salesforce instance. And then this gal that was just supposed to be another client, she was literally making the world a better place with real estate. Because I think when I was a real estate agent, I was trying to like, I don't want to say fool myself, but I was trying to convince myself that, oh, I'm making the world a better place because I'm a trustworthy human. I'm going to actually serve what's in their best interests, all of that. But she's literally holding education classes at Luke Air Force Base for these young airmen, educating them on how to actually use their VA 0% down loan to build a financial future, to be able to not rely on their income from the military to provide for their post-military career. So she's doing that, and these guys are PCSing, transferring out of Luke Air Force Base with more money than they ever thought that they would see in their entire lives, right? And she's really actually making the world a better place. So I did what I swore I was never going to do again and built another real estate team. It was just her and her TC and me, and we built it to become the number one VA real estate team and still stands as that in all of Arizona, actually. So that was called Calzico, and Julie's still doing an incredible job leading that company over there. And the only reason why I split ways there is I really was just like burnt out, basically. As you can imagine, that was a lot in a short, compacted amount of time.
And for those that haven't done, I know real estate agents and realtors have been under the gun a lot lately with everything going on, but it is a lot of work. Like, you're on call 24/7. Crap's always hitting the fan when you're trying to go on a vacation or a trip with your family. You're glued to your phone. There's all the contracts. There's things not going well with the houses or with inspections. And then you're managing expectations of buyers and sellers. It is very, very taxing. Leading up to this, previously doing 500 houses, I can only imagine what it is that you went through at that time. So it's a lot of work. And so,
I mean, the reason I got good at automating the real estate thing is because I was the agent in a car. I just left a showing appointment. I'm on my way to my next showing appointment. When I got out of there, I had three emails from three other people that wanted to see houses. I had two offers on some of our listings. And also the buyer wants to submit an offer on that last house. And how am I going to get all of that done? So it turns into me on the phone, calling some people back, driving to the next thing while having my laptop open and just typing out the purchase contract while driving to the next showing. You ask real estate agents, experienced ones, hey, raise your hand if that's you. Every one of them will chuckle and laugh and raise their hand because they all know what that's like.
And this is the thing with real estate and some other businesses, but especially with real estate, it's very transactional. I mean, you can make more and more and more, but guess what's happening to your work?
And you work more and more. Yeah.
You got to work more. It's not leveraged. Yeah. There's no leverage involved in it. And so it can lead to burnout fairly easily. Yeah. So you had this experience with the second real estate team, and then it sounds like that's what inspired or transitioned you into what is now the Barra Agency, correct?
Basically, I took 6 months off of life. It was right there during the COVID like shutdowns in the very beginning of it. And took 6 months just to like press the reset button, reprioritize things as a family. I was blessed to be able to have the ability to do that, right? To be able to actually just push pause on life for 6 months and get out of it. Because the burnout was real. Like, the best way I could tell my therapist was I'm used to waking up with a dollar to spend every day. And now I wake up feeling like I have 20 cents to spend every day. I just am operating at such a severely crippled capacity, and I can't figure out how to get back, essentially. And it was just the stress that got to me over time, right? So I had to learn, develop new skill sets. And during that 6 months, that's really what I focused in on the most, was learning how to deal with stress and capacity overload and all of that in a much more healthy, positive frame of mind, because it was really my capper from being able to move forward into the dreams that I had, right? And lo and behold, this stuff just kind of falls out of the sky. Sometimes I had some friends call me. The big world of real estate teams, very small world. There's only like 20 teams across the nation that actually get to say that they're in the top 1% across the entire nation. So I had some friends call me and say, hey, is there anybody that like does that thing that you were doing when you owned a real estate team? You know, like the thing, like they couldn't even describe it. And they weren't looking for a COO or operations person. They had all of that locked down. They had standard operating. So they had all of that. What they were looking for was like a chief technology officer to build the technology and automation to help streamline them in the way that I had streamlined our teams. And I'd never heard of fractional CTO as like a agency model ever. I'd heard of fractional CMO and CFO and some other ones. So I just kind of thought, well, it's not even close to a full-time job in a real estate entity, and it never will be, even for the biggest ones that exist. So I trialed it out on three people. There were three friends. I said, hey, I don't even know if I want to do this in 90 days, actually. So in 90 days, we're going to revisit this and see if it works or not. But I will be your CTO on a fractional basis every single month for a certain amount of hours. And it was awesome. It worked. We fundraised a little bit of money behind it to be able to hire in front of the growth trajectory and curve. And now we get this beautiful ability to say that like the largest entities that exist in the residential real estate sector are our clients and all of the tech companies and Zillow even, and all the big teams. It was incredible to like in a very short span of 2.5 years, kind of become the IBM of that industry when the world's hardest problems arise. Bar agency was where all of the impossible problems came, and we created a really great track record of solving those impossible problems, right? And then about 6 months ago, we expanded into the e-commerce world as well to be able to serve a larger crew of businesses. I'm a big believer of not expanding until you have like that whole like do what you say you're going to do. Our core guiding principles of bar agency are do what you say you're going to do and leave people better than you found them. Those are like the two top ones of the core principles that guide us. And I did not want to move into another industry because we didn't have a principal that knew that industry really well, right? And a really cool friend that I met in a mastermind, Jim Carter, happened to have 20 some odd years of experience developing automations in the e-commerce world. So thank God, he for some reason trusted me to say, hey, I want to jump on this ship over here. And that's been going incredibly well. And it's awesome timing. We didn't know that the real estate market was going to get so rough right now between interest rates and the commission lawsuits and the way that commissions are changing. That side of the company is shrinking a little bit, to be thoroughly honest, but it's being held afloat, the entire company, because the e-com side is growing rapidly. So it's cool how that kind of worked out and the timing of all of that. I didn't have a master plan for it. I was open. I remember this quote from Jim Carrey that I hold on to still. I think it was like the Stanford commencement speech. He said, work hard at your dreams, but be open-handed with how they come to pass. And it was one of those moments where, yeah, we were working hard every single day. That is part of the equation. You can't just be lazy. Hard work is part of the equation that creates luck that people call luck, right? Hard work and curiosity are like the two ingredients to create luck if you want to manufacture it. So it was a really cool situation where it just feels like it materialized out of nowhere and gave us exactly what we needed to move on into the future.
You've been through a wealth of experience with different industries and in different capacities. How have you seen your previous experience benefit you and help you with where you're at with the Barra agency?
Man, I will tell you, if there's any agency owners out there listening to this, building an agency is hard freaking work and not for the faint of heart. This is the hardest company I have ever built in my entire life. As well as we decided to be a recurring high MRR like type company where most companies have us retained for about $4,500 a month to be their CTO. So that's a very hard service to run. But I think one, the grit, the ability to keep going. There were so many junctures when we were, because nobody'd really done it. We didn't have any models to base it off of, basically. So we're just kind of making up our systems and processes as we go and iterating and refining. I still remember there was one moment where I had an email typed up to an investor that I knew would buy this thing. Just like I was in my truck, just going, there's no way. this just isn't going to work. Like, this is too hard. There's too much resistance to being able to scale this kind of service this well. I'm out, kind of thing. And thank God that grit thing was in me, because I could never bring myself to push the button, because it felt like I would just be giving up before it was time to actually. There are times to say, I'm going to call it quits, for sure. Yeah. There are definite times when that is necessary, but you can kind of feel it, like, deep down inside, at least for me, I can feel that I was taking the easy way out here, and I was just stressed, and I was looking for an easy way out. And we never did that. And we kept going. And guess what? We found solutions to all the problems. We got better. We got better. And I was just being impatient with our growth, because this is harder when the people are your product primarily, and there is no standardized way on how we go about building custom integrations. Every single build is different and unique every time that we uncover something for a client. It can get stressful, for sure.
I'm glad you brought up the feeling, because that was just the thoughts that I had. And I couldn't help but to reflect back to you sharing your experience of leaving the biochem world and jumping into the tech space. Logically, that probably didn't make sense to you or to a lot of people, but correct me if I'm wrong, there was probably a strong feeling that was pulling you into that. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's excitement at the end of the day. That's something, the work in that 6 months that I had to get to, somewhere over that entrepreneur journey, I started doing things because I was afraid. I was afraid that all of the money was going to go away. I was afraid that the company was going to have to downsize. I was afraid that our clients were going to leave us. So that was like fueling my just incessant work every single day, which, funny enough, fear and anger are incredible fuel sources as far as like, combustion to outputted energy, essentially, very incredible. But it's like putting really shitty fuel in the car, and it's just going to harm the engine after a while, right? And that's what it did to me. It led to burnout. So I had to get back to, why did I even do that stuff in the very beginning? Oh, I was like inspired to create. I was inspired to make products, and I just happen to love technology. So I'm going to live in this little lane of creating innovative products in the technology industry. And that has been super helpful as far as that shift in the feeling. And now, yeah, I forget to eat lunch like every single day. One of my assistants' daily to-do lists is to like, not just get me lunch, but like actually force me to eat it, because she'll put it in front of me and I won't even see it. I'll just keep going, basically. And she's like, you got to call in 30 minutes, man. You need to eat that lunch. So
when you get to that point, it's exciting. And I think that's what a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs desire. And there's different reasons as to maybe why they're not there yet. And like Justin shared with us, there's times where you want to quit. You want to throw it all in. You're like, is this even worth it? I've had a lot of these interviews. I've talked to a lot of business owners that have done anywhere from $1 million a year in revenue upwards to $100 million a year. And if there's one thing that I could take from all these interviews, from them, from my personal experience, it's don't quit.
Yeah.
Don't give up. Keep going, because even if what you're currently doing isn't the end path, it is your path. And there's things that you have to go through. There's things that you have to learn in your current situation that are going to help prepare you for the next opportunity. And guess what? That next opportunity may not be the final opportunity. I mean, Justin, you shared it with us, just your story, right? Like, you went from opportunity to opportunity to opportunity, but they all compounded and it all opened doors and opportunities to get you to where you are today. And it's really all about the journey. Like, who have you become over the last 10, 15, 20 years going through all this?
I even sans all the personal stuff, dad dying, all kinds of stuff that happened along the way there. Man, I feel like, I was joking with my wife, I'm like, I'm ready to be the president of the United States, actually. Now, I feel like I could endure extremely large amounts of stress without it killing me at this point. So, because it doesn't translate as stress, and there's a lot of skill sets that happened along the way, right? And the don't quit thing is so real. I had a mentor once give me, I'm sure he didn't make this up, like, when you're trying to break, I don't know if anybody's done, I grew up doing a bunch of manual labor for my dad on our like little mini farm that we grew up on. And if you're ever trying to like use a sledgehammer to break a concrete slab, the first like 20 swings at that thing, the sledgehammer just bounces off. It literally doesn't do anything. But what you can't see is, if you let that defeat you, you can't see all the stress fractures underneath the surface that it's starting to create. And then on swing like 40, 50, then you start to see the cracks show up. And then at swing 100, you finally got the thing broken apart, right? And I think in business, again, going back to Paul Graham, he said that the goal in business is to never go out of business. That's your only goal, is to never go out of business. You only lose when you go out of business. So our goal as business owners and entrepreneurs is to be the cockroaches of the business world. And I don't mean that in like a slimy way. I mean, he meant that in like a, you need to be very hard to kill, very hard to put out of business. Yes. And how do we do this? By managing overhead really well, being realistic with our income that's happening, and making sure that we are in seats that we won't burn out in, essentially, right? 100%. So being studious to the financial side of things and being extremely scrutinizing for every little dollar that goes, flows in and out of the company. By the way, I got lots of really incredible mentors. I don't know a single one that isn't still that way. I'll be hanging out with a guy that's worth $1 billion, and every now and again, like, man, that t-shirt costs like $46. Can you believe that? I'm like, $46 is, that's like 2 cents to you, to me. It's not even the same, right? Like, you have infinite money because your money makes so much money, but you're still complaining about this shirt being $46 or whatever, you know, when it could have been 20. That same kind of mentality follows through to many, many successful people.
100%. That was such a cool analogy that you shared, metaphor regarding breaking up the concrete. Like Alex Hormozi, a lot of people are familiar with him. He grew some gym launch company, sold it. One of his quotes that he shared, he said, two things happen with a business. Either you make it work or you quit before it does. And I was like, whoa. Like at first I was like, nah, I don't agree with that. And the more I thought about it, I was like, no, he's absolutely right. Either it works or you give up before it does. So don't quit. Keep pushing. Justin, this has been awesome, man. I knew our time was going to go by quick, especially after having our pre-interview and just knowing what we were going to be chatting about. So I really appreciate you taking time out of your day and just sharing your story, sharing your journey with myself as well with our listeners. And as we wrap this up, there's four questions I like to ask every guest at the end of every show. But before I ask those, what's next for you and the Bar Agency?
Yeah, we're going to keep Bar Agency going. We got a holding company. And we are very close to being in the market with the AI, essentially call grading application for primarily the real estate industry to start. But it has many applications outside of just the real estate industry. Anybody that has a sales force that makes calls, it can apply to be able to grade all of the calls in real time, as well as provide really incredible feedback on what they could have done better to convert that to whatever your desired outcome is. So that's what we are kind of heads down. I was joking with you before. My wife has accused me of, I talk to my little AI bot more than I talk to her at this point, because I'm just training it to be smarter and smarter every day.
That's exciting, man. Yeah. So what's one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
Man, it was hard to pick one. So I'm just going to pick one that I just recently read that really helped me understand higher world of building businesses as far as leveraging finance to be able to do that, right? You live in a world that's similar to that. And one of the best traits of all the biggest, best CEOs that have ever existed is that they were not the best at managing people. They were actually the best at allocating money to the correct things within the organization. So they were expert money allocators. Yeah, they had vision, all of those things. But really, at the end of the day, they were very good at knowing which things to diversify to. So the book is called The Outsiders. It's by William Thorndike. And it's, yeah, unconventional CEOs and their radically rational blueprint for success. And the whole book is about, it's a survey of some of the biggest names that you've heard of in the CEO world and how they operated and how they expanded the companies and how they got incredible, like much larger than average market returns for their shareholders. It was inspiring to read and also made me realize that I got to talk about becoming an expert at becoming an expert. I got a lot to learn on the financial side of becoming a big boy CEO like some of my friends are. So
awesome recommendation. What has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
Man, it's got to be the one that my dad gave me all those years ago, which is do what you say you're going to do. Like, if you don't have your word, if you don't have that, then like nothing matters, right? You could sell false promises to people and that'll last you for a little bit and then it'll wear thin and you're going to have to do that over and over. But if you want to create a lasting life, family, relationship with your kids, relationship even with yourself, like that's self-confidence, is keeping your promises to yourself at the end of the day. Being able to have follow through and do what you say you're going to do is exponentially important across all the parts of my life.
That integrity is such a big part of business and being a successful business owner. And I think too many people want to take shortcuts to reach success, and they end up burning themselves. They end up doing things that they don't do what they say they're going to do, or they take shortcuts. So I love that. Awesome quote. If there was one thing you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
Start now if you haven't started already, and learn to become an expert at becoming an expert. The reality of starting is that you will not know everything. And if you're waiting till you know everything to get started, you'll be waiting for the rest of your life. Like, I'm learning things right now to run some businesses that we're into that I did not know a year ago, right? Like, I'm still learning and growing and evolving. So having that skill set of learning how to lock eyes with something, be a very quick learner, and not be so set on your way of doing things, but continue to be an expert at becoming an expert.
Very, very well said. Justin, how can our listeners learn more about you and the Barra Agency?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to see just pictures of me and my kids and some golf, yeah, follow me on Instagram. I'm really bad at being a social media influencer. I don't post anything about work on there. So, but that's Justin Benson. You can find me there if you want to become friends. On the Barra Agency side of things, if anybody out there that's listening has ideas or thoughts or goals of using technology to streamline their businesses and becoming more efficient, then we're one of the fastest ways to do that without having to do it yourself. So go to barraagency.com, and that book a free consult button actually still books to my calendar to this day. I take all of those initial phone calls because they're not sales calls. Our goal on those is core value number two, leave people better than you found them. So our goal is to do exactly that on those calls. And about half of them, we actually point people to other resources that would actually be more appropriate to where they're at in their life cycle, or just give them really great ideas and ways to think. So yeah, book a time with me. Love to chat and connect and hear your ideas of streamlining your business.
Awesome. Look, this has been an incredible conversation with Justin. And if this is your first time listening, I'm glad that you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does. So since I have you here listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. So my company partners with busy professionals just like Justin that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work with other successful business owners like you by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. If you've been frustrated with the stock market, want to grow capital in something you can actually touch and see, and invest in one of the most recession-resilient asset classes, then you can find out how I can serve you by visiting investwithrev.com. It can be overwhelming vetting the right investment and the right operator, but at Rev, we make real estate investing easy. Justin, thanks again, man, for coming on and just sharing your incredible story. And I didn't realize the journey and the roller coaster you were going to take us on with all these different opportunities and jobs, but what an incredible way to gain that experience and be able to leverage it and compound those skill sets to get you to where you are today. So I appreciate you sticking through it and being able to share that experience with us.
Thanks for having me on, man. The best is yet to come for all of us, right? So this was a really cool conversation to have. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. And I got to do a shout out here because this is going to be audio, but behind Justin, hanging on his wall, is a flag or banner of some type that says comfort is a slow death. I love that. And remember, you can't have a $1 million dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there and earn your win for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments, so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.